Hello and welcome to Kicking Tires. My name is Jimmy.
And I'm Justin.
And today is April 20th. Totally forgot. And after a week of hiatus, we are back with a bunch of auto news. Because we actually missed the New York Auto Show that happened last week.
Earlier this week. 8 days ago. This one. Yeah.
So we got a lot of stuff to cover. So let's just dive right into it here. Where's my window? There it is. First things first, BMW 7 Series, brand new. This was released actually today. So they dropped the brand new 7 Series as well as the i7. So the i7 is going to be the electric version. It's placed on the same platform. So they're doing what like the i4 is. They have the i4 Grand Coupe and the i4 electric vehicle. Rather than like what Mercedes has done, has kind of done like the EQ lineup. So they have the EQS, EQE versus their S and E class. So a little different, but I actually kind of like this a little bit more because...
Yeah, because the EQS is not a pretty car. It doesn't have the same look. Like
no, it doesn't.
It doesn't have the road presence. Like, okay, this new 7 Series is very controversial, as with any BMW new release, right? Everything, all the haters come out with, and this is not a new thing. This is like the last 15 years. People have been up in arms about any new car that BMW makes. The front end is very controversial, but I think you're right. I think taking this i7 approach, it just looks the part. Like it's a slight variation on what we would know as the normal 7 Series. Whereas the EQS it's like a jelly bean car. It just doesn't look like that flagship luxury sedan.
Yeah. That's the biggest problem I have with the EQS. It doesn't look like an S-Class.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that presence of S-Class. This will have the presence of the 7 Series because it's exactly the same. I mean, there's some visual differences here and there. Mm-hmm. The grille, the wheels. The i7 will have a little blue like badge behind the front wheel. Just on the skirt there. But other than that, visually, it's very, very similar. The thing that I find a little weird is actually not the front. The front I'm okay with because, you know, I understand BMW's design language, but the rear is kind of
very plain.
Yeah, right?
Very plain. It looks kind of like that 2 Series Grand Coupe. Reminds me a little bit of that. And like, it doesn't have that very chiseled rear. Like, I feel like the back needs to be longer, but they've kind of sloped the C-pillar a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. So it kind of reminds me, you know, like all these new sedans that come out looking kind of sportbacky, but they're not. This looks like that, which, I don't know, it's not the greatest, but it's inoffensive in a sense.
It is very inoffensive, but the thing is, I just don't think it has presence.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't. It looks more bland than the 3 Series or the 5 Series, which doesn't make sense when this is your flagship product. The front end, however, the horizontal split, I think, is what kind of, no pun intended, splits the people's opinions. Because it's got two separate eyes and with a bar running across horizontally. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a very different aesthetic as to every other BMW we've seen historically, which, you know, typically you get the two round headlights or, you know, later on became hexagons. But yeah, this is a very different look, but I think it has potential to have kind of that Rolls-Royce type of appeal to it. Like it reminds me a little bit more of the Rolls-Royce. The Phantom's got that slit headlight. It kind of looks more like that. And the grille is normal looking almost.
What I've seen on the message boards is people are not liking it because it looks too much like a Hyundai. Because
somebody
uses the split headlight design.
Genesis too.
Yeah. So it's a little controversial there. But honestly, to me, I think it looks good. I like that front end.
Yeah. If anyone can pull it off, it's BMW. And they're going to have other products down the pipeline that will trickle down this styling, and then that will become what you've recognized BMW as. The problem with Hyundai is, yes, they have a few models that have a split headlight, but they can't keep it consistent enough. And I don't know. I think the grill looks kind of like it belongs there, kind of. It's not the worst, but it's a bit of a departure. I'm not in love with the styling, but I'm definitely not against it, because I saw a picture of one like a sportier trim with a blacked out version of the grill, and it actually looks really nice.
Yeah, I think the blacked out version is here. This is the 760 version of it. Mm-hmm. Whenever
the picture with the M kind of M axis.
Yeah, it definitely does look a lot more aggressive when it's all blacked out. Like,
yeah, it just looks so mean.
The bottom headlight is blacked out as well.
Yeah.
Like, it looks really aggressive, and I actually really like that look.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things they were going for with this generation, is that the 7 Series kind of became a boat, right? And the 7 Series did not always stand for a boat. The 7 Series used to be kind of the enthusiast full-size executive sedan, right? It was the one that you drove yourself in. You know, you buy a Rolls-Royce or you get an S-Class if you want to be driven around it. But the 7 Series was intended to be that car that you would still drive. But yeah, over the years, it's kind of lost their way. And I think having this sportier model and kind of more in your face look, it kind of makes sense as a driver's car.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the trims of models here. So the i7 is going to be a dual motor, 536 horsepower, 300 mile range with 101.7 kilowatt hour battery. Whereas the regular 7 Series, you get two versions off the start. There'll be the 740, which is going to be a 3-liter six cylinder with 375 horsepower. Mm. And there's also the 760, which used to be the V12, but now it's going to be the 4.4 V8 twin turbo. Both of these gasoline engines will have mild hybrid tech to make it smooth and have all the 48 volt mild hybrid tech stuff that you normally would see. Mm. And there's going to be a plug-in hybrid version of it coming as well, labeled as the 750E. But all that just basically means that, you know, no matter which kind of version of the 7 Series you're looking for, BMW will have you covered. That's really what it comes down to.
Full electric, mild hybrid, high performance, plug-in hybrid.
Yeah.
It's got its bases covered. And
they said there's going to be an M-badged version, maybe not an M7, but maybe like a M760 or something like that, with a twin turbo V12 coming in the future as well.
Nice. And a lot of really good range with the i7 for a vehicle of this size. And
300 miles is more than enough for the needs of, you know, a 7 Series, I think.
Yeah, 7 Series owner.
You don't necessarily need much more than that.
Yeah, and I think that is probably the one to go with, because if you can get that with the M styling stuff, I would love the full electric version, because it's a luxury sedan. You want it to be quiet. And even if you bought the M version, gasoline, mild hybrid version, you're probably not going to hear any real exhaust or engine noise. It's probably going to be pumped in anyways.
Pumped in, yeah.
For sure. I think electrification makes a lot of sense for this type of vehicle. It just, the way power delivery works and the way sound works, for a full-size luxury, really high-end type of car, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the interior here. So the interior is very similar to like the iX. Mm. So you got the dual screen that's right from your cluster over to your infotainment. There's this kind of like crystal looking thing that stretches across the mid bar. From the pictures and what I can see, it changes color between like opaque to like red and blue, depending on your temperature differences. The interior looks really good. You also get a panoramic sunroof, but the biggest thing is this drop-down screen that comes from the top. We talked a little bit about this like a few weeks back. Mm. It's a 31.3-inch touchscreen. It drops down from the top. It's powered by ALEXA.
Very high resolution, too. For a car screen, it's pretty ridiculous.
You can have like conference on it. Like, it's designed to be a full working display. And it looks massive. It is massive. And it looks beautiful as well.
Yeah, 31-inch. And then also the... So it disguises itself as kind of the middle beam that you would typically see on the sunroof. But the sunroof itself has these kind of LED light accents on it, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So it's got like strips running across it. It looks, you know, it's just like what you would see like with kind of, some people might call it tacky, but it's kind of cool interior design stuff. But from, you know, housing and commercial type of interior design,
right,
trickled onto a car, which is kind of cool.
Even the doors on the back have 5.5-inch little displays on the door, so you can control all the different things. Like, it's, people always say the S-Class is like a technological marvel. The new S-Class, like, there's a lot of good stuff in it, but this looks to kind of expand on that a little bit more. I feel like this is a little bit better.
Like, yeah, and not as traditional, right? Like, the S-Class, they kind of play it safe in comparison, I think. They're taking chances with a big drop down screen and the design elements, all the LED elements everywhere, and just even their fabric choices. It's not kind of run of the mill, and that's kind of what the 7 Series need to be, because the S-Class always kind of been the bread and butter. It's like the staple of, you know, full-size luxury sedans. And so manufacturers like Lexus, BMW, they just have to do things to shake things up a bit and just make people interested in their products. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, everyone's got their own niche. It's not really like what's better, what's worse. It's just what your tastes are. I really like their seats, like the two-tone, the gray one.
Yeah,
it looks pretty nice.
Overall, I gotta say, I do love this update, or not update, this brand new model of the 7 Series. The current one, like, I always feel like the 7 Series is just an elongated 5 Series.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't do as much to it. This, I think they just, you know, they definitely reached over that bar a lot more than they have in the past.
Yeah, exactly. And I think with the previous generations, few of them, they kind of just released them kind of in parallel with the 5 Series, and that's kind of why they just didn't really distinguish themselves as much. But yeah, now we're seeing kind of this is the 7 Series leading the charge, which is kind of always what Mercedes has done, right? Like, Mercedes always, it's always been S-Class trickled down. Yeah. This 7 Series is kind of the first production, I would say, car that has all of this new design stuff that we've seen on all these concepts over the last few months into a production-ready product, and it's led by the 7 Series, which is kind of unique, and it's bringing a lot of excitement back to the 7 Series name. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on, though. We got a lot of topics. Let's talk about the Lexus here. Lexus is a brand new EV. It's the RZ. So it's based off the BZ4X or the Subaru Solterra. But it's a little bit wider, a little bit shorter than the BZ4X. And there's like completely different body on it. So it looks a little bit different. I mean, you can definitely tell that it's still based off the same thing. Mm-hmm. But it has Lexus styling elements in it. What you have to know is it comes standard with four-wheel drive. As of now, anyways, there's not going to be a front-wheel drive model. Maybe in the future, who knows? Mm-hmm. But it is going to be the four-wheel drive. They call it Direct 4. It's going to have a 225-mile range, which is pretty solid. And about 300 horsepower total, which is definitely more than the Subaru and Toyota version of it. I mean, overall, like, we kind of already looked at this a little bit when when Toyota did their unveiling and showed like all their cars. We already seen how this would look like. This is just a full release and is exactly what we expected.
Yeah, well, and you'd be happy to find out that the yoke is not on every model.
Yeah, so the yoke, what they said is the yoke is going to have a limited steering ratio. So you're not going to be like turning it like 900 degrees like a normal car would be. I think they said it's 120 or something like that. It's designed so that you don't have to go hand over hand with it. Mm. So it's one of those digitally connected steering wheel, no physical connection. And because of that, they can tune the steering wheel or tune the yoke to just steer by wire and have a much more reduced like actual steering angle.
Really curious how that will work. Yeah, because there's no mechanical link to the steering column. Because I know what they tried to do. Infinity did that, yeah. And everyone hated it. I don't know if everyone hated it because of what it stands for, because of Top Gear and all these kind of, I don't know, old guard type of journalists that, you know, anything less connected is worse. It really just depends on the execution. We've been playing all these sims, right? Like all these good racing sims, and there's no mechanical connection to a virtual steering rack either. And we have no problem with that, right? I like the idea. I think I'm open to a yoke. And I think I'm curious how the chassis tuning would be, because we were talking about it before the show, and Lexus always, compared to the Toyota, the equivalent Toyota model, they always drive a lot better. And I'm not even talking about slightly better. They drive a lot better. Like, even just you compare a Camry to an ES, RAV4 to an NX, UX to whatever Prius, it's night and day. You can't compare how, like, a Corolla hybrid to a UX, even though they're both TNGA, they're roughly the same size, same similar power plants. Well, not in the case of the UX, but, you know, they're just a lot better dynamically speaking, because they have to compete with the likes of, you know, BMW, Mercedes, Audi, whereas Toyota doesn't, and Toyota doesn't care. Like, they know you'll buy them anyways, whereas with a luxury product, they have to tune it better. Yeah. So I'm really curious if we will see a distinct difference between the Lexus EV and the Toyota EV. Speaking of the BZ4X, they talked about the front-wheel drive version, single motor one, but the price difference wasn't significant. So I'm wondering if they will do that with the RZ, because the BZ4X, I think base model, the XLE front wheel drive and XLE dual motor all wheel drive, that is only about 2000 US, which I wonder if we'll even get the front wheel drive in Canada, because if you're paying that much anyways, what's the point of going single motor versus dual motor?
Right. And generally speaking, like in Canada, we always get the all-wheel drive variants of vehicles. Like in the US, you can get a front wheel drive version of the RX, I think, still.
Yeah. And I don't think I've seen like front wheel drive Highlanders or stuff like that we just wouldn't want in Canada. It wouldn't make sense in our climate. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely an interesting product. Can't wait to, you know, get my hands on one of these and actually give it a shot. Another vehicle that I wouldn't mind giving a shot is the brand new Ferrari. They released the 296 GTS. So the GTS is the GTB, but convertible, S for spider. What you have to know about it is it weighs 154 pounds more than the coupe. However, it matches the hardtop in the acceleration as well as top speed, according to Ferrari. Mm. But V6, 120 degree angle, maximum power with the hybrid part is 819 horses.
So that's a lot of freaking power.
But, you know, 654 from the twin turbo V6 normally without the hybrid.
I can't imagine how fast that thing feels. Yeah.
I mean, top down, it's going to be pretty exciting.
Look at the graphics they used on the red one, though. It's, I don't know if you have a picture of the red one, but they have, yeah, there you go. I think that the lipstick, the white lipstick, it doesn't do it for me. Like, Ferrari has kind of become this brand that is so arrogant nowadays. You know, they're picking their customers. And I mean, there's other manufacturers that do it, but Ferrari is probably the worst. Their build quality is not phenomenal typically. The graphic on this thing is not pretty, in my opinion. It's just the way it shapes the front end. It just makes it look so miserable. That's already a better angle if you look at it from lower down. It just, compared to the blue car that they featured, it's a lot uglier.
Yeah, I think a solid color works a lot better for the
yeah, front or end. Just do like a simple stripe, right? Like the stripe on this, it kind of just gives me like a Pokemon vibe. Like, I don't even know what it looks like. Like a clown kind of.
Let's be honest, this car isn't designed for either of us anyway, so.
No, and the people that are going to buy it have already bought them.
Yeah.
Because they're low production, and you have to be pretty qualified to even consider buying one. You can't just walk into a showroom with cash in hand and be like, hey, order me up a 296 GTS. It doesn't really work like that in the world of Ferrari.
Definitely does not.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about another car that we can't order. Audi. Audi made a concept car called the Urban Sphere. This is a minivan, essentially.
ID Buzz?
think ID Buzz, except Audi.
Way bigger. No, this is way bigger.
And only four seats. But like
way bigger, but with less seats.
It looks amazing, though. Like, okay, first of all, it's not going to come to North America. If they do make it, it's going to be a China exclusive, because in China, vans are kings.
Executive vans. Yeah,
because it's what the ultra rich like to sit in. So this is basically what they're kind of aiming for.
Yeah. Vans just make sense for a luxury experience, because the low step in height, lots of room. Oh, I mean, what else can you ask for? Yeah,
it's exactly what you need in like an SUV. Like, you have to step up into it, step down. Like, if you know a person in a dress, this wouldn't be the most comfortable. This, like, coach doors in the back, you get like the maximum allowable entrance on this vehicle. It looks amazing. We'll never get it. We'll never see the day of, you know, the light of day here in North America. But yeah. I love how Audi's, you know,
does look very much like the Q4 e-tron, but stretched out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stretch out, smooth out. Like, I just think
it's kind of dorky in a way that I think you and I like, but it is kind of dorky.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you noticed the window element, like the glass, the way they play with the glass on the A-pillar. It's pretty neat, this car. I don't know how much of this would make it to a production version, but it's kind of special. It's all glass, the roof and the whole upper half of the car.
Yeah.
And the pillars look fairly thin relative to other products. Yeah.
It's a beautiful dash. The seats look great. Yeah. Lots to love here. But
yeah, and we're seeing that in the trend to fabrics again, like textile.
Yeah, yeah.
Seats.
Rather than full leather.
Mm-hmm.
This looked like, you know what this reminds me of? Like
going to a dentist?
Yeah, so. I was going to say like a dentist or like a salon. It just reminds me of that kind of chair for some reason.
Yeah.
But it looks absolutely amazing. It really does. Urban Sphere concept. Definitely take a look at it. Something that doesn't look as good in my eyes is the brand new Mercedes EQS SUV. We talked about this like 2 weeks ago when they dropped the interior photos. But the exterior photos are now out and all the...
You thought it would look like.
It's exactly what we thought. It's a giant egg that is a bigger egg than...
Honestly, it looks better than the sedans, though. I like the way... Like, it's very round, but it at least has a D-pillar that's, like, pronounced. I don't like the regular EQS because of just how egg-shaped it is.
So, the D-pillar isn't exactly how it is. So, the D-pillar goes down, kind of egg-shapey, but there's actually a black bit for the spoiler that's actually extended above. So, like, that visual trick that Mach-E does.
It looks very Lincoln from behind, though.
It has that American look for it. But, I mean, it's a car built for North Americans. That's kind of what it is.
It kind of defeats the point of an SUV because, like, it looks so dorky compared to, like, the GLS, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the whole point of an SUV is that you impose on people.
Well,
I think that's why North Americans love it. But this is just, like... It's so soft.
Yeah. So this EQS SUV is like, you know, they take the S-Class, the EQS class, and then turn it into an SUV. With the EQS, they actually had the length to add that third row. But as you can see in this photo, I mean, unless you have literally no legs, you're not going to really fit back there. It's going to be super tight for anyone of height to fit in the back.
Yeah. I don't know. With the seat, the second row slid up a little bit, it may be feasible.
I watched a video of Matt Watson in the back. He was like, Matt Watson's not a tall dude. He wasn't comfortable at all.
Yeah, it's more of where the X5 and the previous GLE 3-row would be. Yeah, it's not a GLS.
Definitely not.
Yeah. But really thick pillars, though.
Yeah.
Like, the pillars, you know, going from the Audi Urban Sphere to this, it's night and day in terms of the pillars. There's just not that much light opening into this cabin, which kind of feels weird on an EV. I feel like EV, you want to just open up the world. Yeah.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what we thought. There's nothing really else to really kind of talk about it. That's really it. EQS SUV. If you want a EQS as an SUV form, now you can get one. Or if you want a sedan, you can get that as well. I mean, Mercedes gives you that option, right?
What I'm curious about is what will the EQE SUV be like?
It's just a smaller version of this.
Just be like lose the third row. And
yeah,
this is already not like that big of an SUV.
Yeah.
Right. And it's got a more cab forward. It's a cab forward design. I don't know if there's room for that midsize.
Yeah. I mean, they already have the EQC, which is already the five passenger, two row SUV. So maybe they won't even bother. But I mean, it's Mercedes. If anything, they will make it and they just have that as an option for you.
Yeah.
Because that's what Mercedes is all about. Like their entire lineup, it's about options.
And then recycling their front end styling.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's so boring. I don't like this company very much these days.
Well, speaking of not boring, BMW also updated their X7. Mm-hmm. So unlike the 7 Series, which is all brand new, the X7 got an update on the front end, interior, as well as the rear end. So the front end basically looks like the new 7 Series. It's that divorced daytime running light, headlight kind of look. And I think it suits the X7 quite well. It's a more mature look.
It's more mature, more high-end, and it differentiates it from the X5 a bit. More the old one was kind of X5 with a big grill. This one, it has its own look to it, and it has the presence that we talked about with the 7 series, which is great. And it's got little other styling elements, like the fangs on the bumper. I think you mentioned that, and the 3D lights, which are kind of cool. Like, it's got kind of diamonds and shapes.
Yeah, it has kind of patterns in the headlights as well as taillights. Yeah.
The overall shape, you can tell it's a few years older because it's got that very traditional kind of SUV side profile.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's kind of where, and it's a very practical side profile, right? Compared to the EQS SUV we just talked about, this will have a more legitimate third row because of that more upright look. Very, you know, blocky SUV. Yeah.
So what they've done on the inside here is they updated the dash to incorporate the new screen layout, compared to the traditional BMW where you have your cluster and infotainment on the side. I think they did a pretty good job to make it still cohesive because they didn't change like the door panels. The door panels are the old ones. They really only changed like just kind of like the middle portion to have that display. And I still think it looks good. It still, fits in with that BMW profile.
Yeah, it's subtle enough that you wouldn't think that this is like an all new interior, but they've changed quite a bit on it. The display is really the big departure from the old one because it's kind of one giant curved screen. It's not one giant, it's actually two separate screens.
Two separate screens.
It's kind of a linked bezel. I don't know how I feel about how it just drops off at the side, kind of like the Ioniq 5. The screen is not as like integrated in the styling elements as it was before, right? But that's kind of the cool thing is that if you start looking at the old interior now, like from 2019 or 2018, I don't remember when the X7 came out, but then you look at it and you're like, oh, okay, this is what we've seen on the 3 series. Well, the 5 series, like, it just looks, it's starting to look not old and not cheap, but it looks very similar to lower end products. Mm-hmm. So then they facelift it and then move it up again, which I think is really cool because it just differentiates it from the rest of the lineup. And that's kind of how you should do a facelift. Like, you should make it feel fresh. You should make it feel like a new and different product. Whereas a lot of manufacturers will literally facelift a car and put a new grill on, a slightly revised headlight, and overall looks very similar. This X7 it's a major facelift. Inside and out. You won't confuse this for the old car, and you won't confuse this interior as having tech from... And that's what usually catches you off guard is that when you have tech from 2018 on the 2023 model. Yeah.
You know what they are missing now with this new interior? You know how BMWs always have like the presets in the middle? The number like 1 to 8 generally.
Yeah, yeah.
All that is gone. So you don't get the presets. And also the climate control is now fully inside the infotainment. Because before it was like in between the vents.
Yeah.
You can always have your climate control there. And I always like BMWs for that because like you never have to dive into an infotainment to control that. It looks like all of that is now gone.
Mm-hmm.
With this new
system. No, it has presets.
It still has presets?
No, sorry.
It looks like there's just different buttons there.
Yeah.
Because I see the hazard light and something else.
Yeah, it's something else.
But no the regular like 8 button presets that you normally would have.
Yeah.
Oh, well, shouldn't be too big of a deal, to be honest. Most people didn't even use it anyways.
Yeah, and BMW is kind of the king of in-car UX, in my opinion. Like, their infotainment's always been the easiest to use. Even though they got so much crap for it back in the mid-2000s to do the iDrive, but it actually works. So people were just closed-minded about it. iDrive, like I hopped into like a 07-7 series, I think, recently, and I'm like, this still kind of makes sense. Like, you know, it's very, it's very future and forward thinking, I think.
No, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I don't, I've never used the presets. I think the Supra has it, the M2 had it for sure, and I never really press it. Like,
I think I changed it for like some press cars to have like my radio station, and then the other one is like the performance meter.
I couldn't save performance meter, I think.
Oh.
For some reason. Yeah, the gauges. I think I couldn't save that as one of the presets. No, but I could switch between. I had music collection as one because I have the hard drive, and then I had like 94.5 as like number two or something. And but I rarely switch the rarely touch those buttons.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Stellantis. Stellantis, if you don't know, is like the mother of Jeep, Chrysler, Fiat, and a whole bunch of other things. But they launched the Grand Wagoneer last year, and they're like, you know what, Grand Wagoneer, it's not long enough. It's just not long enough. So what they've done is they made an L version. This extended L version of the Grand Wagoneer is 7 inches longer in the wheelbase. 7 inches.
Yeah, that's and huge. A foot longer overall.
That's huge.
Yeah, 12 whole inches. So the full length now with the Grand Wagoneer is 227 inches. So almost as big. Actually, I think that is as big as like a full size pickup. Like a half ton short bed pickup. It's basically what you're driving like, around.
It's massive. Almost. The doors are massive on this thing.
The rear overhang is massive. The rear overhang. Because, you know, the whole point of this is that they can say we have the best in class overall passenger volume, cargo volume, whatever you want to say. And it's very obvious they have the biggest cargo volume because there is like a whole, I don't know, it's like a whole CRV behind the third row. Like the whole behind the rear tire, there is like more trunk space than you get in their typical crossover.
Yeah, yeah, behind the third row is as much space as your typical crossover. That's enormous how much space you have in the back. And you fold that down, and then behind the second row is even more massive. Like you can fit a car in there, kind of thing. I'm okay. This might be just me. I don't really see a need for an L version. Like I know there's like elongated versions of the Escalade and Yukon and everything. I get it. But I mean, it might be just here in Vancouver where it really just doesn't make sense. But I'm sure in elsewhere it might make a lot more sense. But here, it's just like a long vehicle like this. Even I was driving an F-150 quad cab, not as long as yours. I thought that vehicle was already too long. You know, like it's just too long of a vehicle to park in Vancouver traffic.
Yeah, and it was crazy because when I went to Toronto last week, I was really surprised because no one drives big SUVs or trucks there unless you really have to, because the streets are tight in some areas. Like it's got older neighborhoods, and if someone pulls over to let off a Uber passenger or do a food delivery or anything, you can't drive around them in a big SUV. Like they just don't work in some of these urban environments. They might work in, you know, smaller towns in the States, but it just, as cities are getting tighter and tighter, I don't know how this makes sense. Yeah. But 44 cubic feet, that's 1250 liters. So that's like a normal crossover SUV worth of trunk space in already a massive three-row SUV.
But I guess the main thing here, other than the length, is the new engine. It's the in line six that we talked about a few weeks back. So it's going to be slightly more fuel efficient than the Hemi V8. And I mean, you know, it's a time, so we kind of have to.
The Hemi has to go. Yeah, But yeah, you know what? It's more power. So 420 horse, 468 pound feet in the normal Wagoneer L. And then the Grand Wagoneer L gets the HO version, the high output, 510 horsepower, 500 pound feet of torque. So good solid power on there. And only a little bit better MPGs. You know, 1 to 2 miles per gallon better than the old engine combined, than the old V8s. Which I think the V8s, are they still kicking around for a bit? Because
I would believe so, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, they just released the Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer with the, even you can you get the Wagoneer with the Pentastar?
No.
Or only the Grand Cherokee no. L?
Yeah, only Grand Cherokee L was Pentastar. Grand, yeah. All Grand Wagoneers have the Hemi.
Yeah, so I think if they killed off the Hemi after one model year, people would be like, what the heck? yeah. Where this way, it kind of keep them side by side. Some people might still like it. Some people might still prefer the Hemis. The Hemi is actually a pretty reliable engine. I don't know how the cylinder deactivation stuff matters, but they've been okay reliability wise. Yeah.
Would make sense. I mean, it's been around forever.
It's an ancient, almost 20-year-old design with small updates over the years. But either way, they're not going to be fuel efficient.
No.
Because they're so heavy, they're so big, and yeah, only a 1 to 2 mile per gallon increase.
I mean, you get what you can get, right?
Yeah, Jeep is not really pushing fuel economy, for at least for this model.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
Chrysler's going full electric, though.
Yeah, they are.
In a very near future, if they can.
If they can. If they survive.
Yeah.
Moving on to Lamborghini. There's another version of the Huracan. I don't know. I'm kind of tired of seeing different versions of the Huracan these days.
Huracan Technica, it's called.
Like,
well, the STO was kind of a big deal. The STO was a bit of a shocker, very hardcore track focus, like crazy GT3 type aerodynamics on a street car. And the reviews, a lot of them were like, this is too much car, like it's too hardcore. And I kind of get why they had to do this Technica, because the STO was just, it's a race car. The front hood was insane on that thing, and this still has that kind of wider stance with the Technica, but it gets a frunk back and still has like the same similar performance stuff. So the same engine, 630 horsepower now with the Technica, 631, so same power output as an STO. Weighs a little bit more, I think about 100 pounds more. And yeah, it's just kind of a softer version of their car that they went a little bit too hard on with the STO.
Still more so hardcore than
the Evo.
The Evo.
It's hard to keep up because there's just too many trims. The Performante, the Evo, STO, and then now the Technica, which this is kind of... I think some Huracan people like this because it's the same car reimagined multiple times, but your old car is not phased out in a sense, because the Huracan has been around since, I think, 2016. So it's actually been around for a while. Where you look at a brand like McLaren, their cars have changed every year to year and a half,
yeah,
almost. And so if you bought a, let's say, 540C, that car is very obsolete now. Or MP412, that was, what, 2013? Yeah, that car has been, you know, replaced four or five times over now.
Yeah, it was like 650.
Yeah, in the last 10 years. So it's hard. Those are also hard to keep up. Whereas this, it's got big differences, right? Like it's got rear wheel drive with torque vectoring, and whatever rear wheel direct steering ratios mean, but it has rear wheel direct steering. which I guess does something performance wise. I don't really know. I couldn't really find a great explanation of what that really means, but I guess it has active rear steering. I noticed the front end just reminded me a little bit of the Bolt UV, just the way that the teardrop comes from the headlights. The Bolt UV, an EUV, I forgot what they're called, EV and EUV. And then also the Opel version, the Ampera.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of masked the wide body that they've done on it, the wide front, I guess.
Yeah.
No, it's a cool car. It's, you know, the idea behind it is to make it kind of the best of both worlds, right? You're getting all that, almost all of the high performance tech out of the STO in a more livable package, if that's what floats your boat. I think the collectors are still going to want the STO. The hardcore track guys are still going to want the STO, and the STO just visually is a really exciting looking car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas this is kind of neither here nor there for me. Like, it is funky, but I think I might prefer the Evo or the Performante.
For me, it's just another iteration. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's, like, there's just so many Huracans now. Like, it's so hard to keep up which version is which, what differences they are.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when the Gallardo came out, and then there was a whole bunch of differences between the Gallardo and it. Like, the Balboni, I was like, why is there so many versions? But that's just, you know, traditional Lamborghini. They always do that with every single one of their cars to keep it fresh, so that way more and more people will buy it. I think you talked about that like a year or so back. But to me, it's just like, it's just another Huracan.
The cool thing is, it doesn't make you want to replace yours. Like, that the thing about that I like about Lamborghini's philosophy is, it's not like, oh, a new GT3 comes out or a new McLaren comes out, oh, time to hit the dealer, I'm going to trade in my old one. I don't think Lamborghini cares about that. I don't think they're like, oh, we're going to get so many Huracan trade-ins and they're just trying to bring a new buyer in, which I think is a good mindset. Like, I think it's very anti-Ferrari in that sense. Ferrari is very much, we're going to keep our loyal customer base. We're going to pick our customers, and the car will sell itself, and we don't have to do anything. Like, it's our way or the highway.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that I do like that about Lamborghini. I think that's not common in the supercar world.
Yeah, for sure. Another update from the New York Auto Show, Subaru Outback. This is a very, very mild update to like the front and rear ends of it. I mean, it's just to make it look a little bit better compared to like the Forester and everything. To me, it's not a significant difference. I think the current or the outgoing Outback may look a little bit better, because I'm not a big fan of the fog lights on the bottom.
Yeah, they're strange. They have like these kind of round pod integrated fog lights in the lower part of the front bumper, and it looks kind of like an ATV, or like, I don't know, it just doesn't look,
it doesn't,
it's more in your face than this car really has the
right
to. It cannot be that bold.
Yeah.
And they've made the grill more bold, and it's writing checks it can't cash, I feel like, with the styling. Like, they're trying to switch it up a little bit too much. And it's weird because the Wilderness just came out, and then now they got a facelift
again. They got a facelift the whole thing, yeah.
I don't get that, and I don't like that they still have that naturally aspirated engine. I don't know why you would still buy something of this size that can carry so much stuff with 180 horsepower CVT gearbox.
The base engine is definitely a letdown, but I mean, it's the same engine that's in the Forester,
which is also a letdown. The only one it kind of makes sense in is the Crosstrek, and you can only get that in the better Crosstrek. in the outdoor and up it's, trim. The base Crosstrek engine is really bad.
Is it that engine in the Crosstrek?
Yeah, the 2.5 liter NA.
Did it have 180 horsepower?
Yes, the base Crosstrek does not. The base Crosstrek has like 150, which is worse than Subaru made 20 years ago in a heavier, newer car. You know, when people have gotten heavier as well.
Oh, it did.
Yeah,
I remember driving the Crosstrek, the new one, when they updated to 182 horsepower, the 2.5, and I still thought it was slow.
It's still slow. It's the engine that car should have base.
Yeah, 60 is 7.5 seconds.
7.5 is okay, but it feels slow. Like 7.5 is actually like respectable. Like, but yeah, the base engine is real slow. I don't know why the Outback still has that base engine. They keep it there, I guess, maybe economy purposes. They have to have
they definitely need to do something about their engine more than anything.
Yeah. But the turbo is exciting. The turbo is nice. Yeah. But they're pretty expensive, the turbo models, because a base Outback starts at 31 here in Canada, and yeah, to get the turbo engine you're spending over 40. So there is a jump, but I feel like you really need to, like, the base model, they don't need to sell this car at 31, right? Like we don't need that cheap of a model. We just do one good engine and save some production costs. Parts department don't have to stock as much stuff either. Eventually it works out. The big difference with this generation Outback, and it's the first one to get it, is the new EyeSight system, which adds a third camera. So now it's not just those two pods sticking out of the headliner. Now they have a wide angle central camera unit. So you have your rear view mirror, and then all around it, you got three separate cameras. So pretty cool. I mean, Subaru was kind of the first to do like a two camera setup, or they're kind of known for that two camera setup. I mean, every manufacturer has more than one.
Most people use the radar system rather than a camera system.
Yeah. But what's also unique about this is that they have the auto emergency steering system, which that could be good. I'm really curious how it works in practice. Because supposedly it can steer you out of an accident under 80 kilometers an hour, which auto emergency braking, I think, has saved a lot of people. But I don't know about emergency steering. Because who knows?
Something I should try.
Yeah, like I've driven in cases where the auto emergency braking wants to stop me, because like say I change lanes and it thinks a car turning right is I'm gonna hit it, but I'm not. Even if I were to drive straight, I think the random swerving is probably more dangerous, but who knows.
We'll figure it out, I guess.
Yeah. I wonder if it integrates with the blind spot sensors and whatnot. So you end up not hitting the car in front of you, but you cut off
the car beside you.
Yeah. Which I don't know how good the blind spot system is on these cars. But that it is kind of a neat feature. There is a potential to be practical in a sense, but there's just so much risk involved. I don't know why they would do something like that. Emergency steering to avoid a collision.
We'll give it a shot as soon as I can get one in hands.
Yeah, go full speed towards kind of a standing object, and if it swerves the right way, which is not towards the parked cars on the right,
then we'll know.
Where do you go, right? Like, it only works under 80, so it won't work on the highway necessarily. No. And what if you're in control, right? Like you know where you want to go to avoid accident. Because, you know, some people do that. Like if you're about to hit someone, maybe you swerve into oncoming and you see there's no cars coming. Will this be able to do something like that? And if you try to do it, will it fight you from going into the oncoming, right? Like,
yeah.
Right.
Computer knows best kind of thing.
Mm.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. we'll figure that out. Hopefully Subaru will let me test out their active safety features. And you know, not kill me, but we'll see in the near future.
Yeah.
Something else that the New York Auto Show Auto Bring also brought up. Whatever. Nissan Pathfinder Rock Creek Edition. Not the first time we see a Rock Creek Edition to the Pathfinder. The last time that they brought it out was they put green paint on a Pathfinder and they call it a day, really. This new one, a little bit better. They actually lifted it a little bit, put some AT tires with some faux beadlock wheels, which are horrendous. But
oh, really? I don't hate them.
Really? Oh, I don't like faux beadlock wheels at all. I think they look gross to me.
I don't think like that wheel's thing. Bad.
But it's better than a full blacked out wheel that a lot of other kind of off-road trim versions are going with. I'll give them that. So they get you Toyo Open Country AT3s. ATs?
AT3s, yeah. Same as what we have on our RAV4, actually. And a similar size, a 30-inch tire size. So same size, but we have a 17-inch or 16-inch. This is an 18-inch.
Looks good.
Yeah, it looks good. It fills up the wheel well nicely, and it's actually the same size as you'd find on a normal Pathfinder, but it doesn't look like undersized.
Yeah.
30-inch tire is about right for this type of truck. 31s is what you would see on like a Colorado or a Tacoma. But for a crossover three row, this kind of makes sense. And the tubular roof rack, that is, it does add quite a bit of height too, so maybe that's why they had to keep it, you know, more reasonable. It doesn't look like there's that much room to put a much bigger tire anyways. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty cool. I think it, like, that's a legitimate all-terrain tire. Toyo AT3. It's not like what the Trail Sport did, which is the Destination LE2s, or what Hyundai did. I forgot what they've chosen
for this is an off-road actual trip. AT tire.
Yeah, there's a legitimate AT tire. You know, no locking diffs or anything like that, but there's an off-road mode.
No changes to the overall powertrain at all.
A little bit. It does get a power boost, actually.
Really?
Somehow they've remapped the fuel and it gains 11 horsepower and 11 pounds feet of torque.
Oh.
Which I guess helps when you have a slightly taller, slightly less aerodynamic, slightly heavier tires. Maybe that's why they've done it. But yeah, and a little bit of a lift, 15 millimeters. It's not significant, but it does look cool. It does. It doesn't hurt. 15 millimeters is not going to handle worse anyways. So it's, yeah, I feel like they could have gone slightly bigger on a tire, but you got to keep in mind fuel economy, acceleration, height, all these things that make sense. And the 30s look like they're perfectly fine.
They just fit the car.
Yeah, and pretty cool leatherette interior, orange stitching all around. So not just on the seats, dash, and the steering wheel, the doors. I think they all get orange stitching here and there. And then that darker front end, two-tone color options. So it's got three different two-tone colors, but there's no list. So one is this kind of sand brown, light beige color, which is nice. You know, it's quite rugged. Very desert style. Hopefully they do the green, which they've done on the normal Pathfinder anyways.
The green will look
good. The green is really nice. And then they'll probably do like one monotone color, like a white or a gray. A
white or black, or yeah.
Black. Yeah, something like that. That's what my guess is. It's got off-road tune suspension, so probably slightly different shocks. But no, I like this Pathfinder generation a lot better than the old one, which was shared with that Infiniti. And I like this a lot better than the Infiniti product that they put out.
Yeah, I think what they've done here is, you know, they updated the product to have that kind of go anywhere adventure type vehicle kind of look, which is exactly what this new Pathfinder is for.
And it's what the Pathfinder always stood for, right?
Yeah. You don't get the sunroof, which is kind of a bummer to me. Like, I'm a big fan of sunroofs. I know you don't personally like them. But that's the only thing I think that's kind of missing on the Rock Creek here.
Yeah, it looks like looks like trailer hitch is standard too. It doesn't mention it, but I see it in all the pictures. You don't need a sunroof when you have a tent above your car, and that's what really this is for, right? It's for camping. Rock Creek. I googled Rock Creek just to see, like, where the hell is Rock Creek, and then Rock Creek BC came up. No. But it's not Rock Creek BC, it's Rock Creek in Lookout Mountain, Georgia. So it's in the States. It's not Rock Creek, British Columbia.
That makes sense.
There is an area near Soyuz called, or near Kelowna, called Rock Creek, British.
maybe when I get this as a press car, I'll take it to Rock Creek.
Take it to Rock Creek. Yeah. It's only 4 hours away.
That's a little far.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think that's really it for this week. Thank you so much for listening in, and we'll catch you next week for some more automotive news.
Yeah.